This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 30th of December, 1953. The title of this lecture is Automaticity. This lecture is 60 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Arrow Productions.
And this is the second hour Phoenix Congress, third day. What I've just got through telling you about, as was last night, I told you about havingness so that you would have some inkling of why we were doing this to you. Now, there's a technique like this in Six Steps to Better Beingness, good old Six Steps. And it has to do with wearing heads. Now, that's very covert, wearing heads in Six Steps to Better Beingness. Very covert indeed. Because it tells people to put on the heads, but it doesn't tell them to take them off. See? You're remedying mass. Now, you will find, however, that there's a certain percentage of people early in it that won't quite be able to put on a head. See, they're not quite able to put on this head. And that's because they've chosen heads for their randomity. See, there's the head. And they look at people's heads, and they try to avoid heads, and they don't want anything to do with heads, and that sort of thing. Well, you're asking them actually to be heads. That's one thing it's doing in Six Steps. You're asking them to be a head. And the other one, you're remedying mass. It wouldn't matter whether you were putting ice cream bricks on them. It just wouldn't matter. Because it's simply mass, and you're just adding mass and more mass and more mass and more mass to the individual, and he starts feeling better. See? Nothing to that. So there's two purposes in this. Now, running 10 minutes of nothing in Six Steps to Better Beingness, we, of course, run out the unmocking machinery. A person has an awful lot of this automatic machinery. It says, there will be no police. There will be no this. There will be no that. And he has all this set up automatically, see, so he doesn't have to think about it, you know? Now, a person who has learned how to work and earn money has set up, there will be no starvation. He has set up, there will be no. You get that automatic machine? There will be no nothings. So when he starts to put up a golden ball or something of the sort, magically and mysteriously, one will appear. Why? Well, there'll be no. We've just run out half of the automatic part of it. See, so there will be no nothings, is what he's saying. And that's exactly what he starts doing. And the automatic machinery cuts in. All right, there's now no person standing in front of me. And he gets a person. Well, his machinery is set up so there will be no nothings. And you've asked him to put a nothing there. His machinery is running the other way. His machinery is running to put a something there. So he has to be put in command of his own automatic activities. Now, there are pre-clears that they'll sit there, you know, and they'll say, now I'll get a mock-up of a man. Mock-up of a man will appear. And now I'll get a mock-up of this and that. You tell a pre-clear this and that, and you just go on very contented that this pre-clear is doing what you say. Yes, he's doing what you say, all right, via machinery. Now, every now and then, if you were to ask him, the man would be doing something different, but he didn't intend the man to do. He just sits there and watches the man. He's sort of an effect of the mock-up, happy about the whole thing, you know. You say, now what's happening? You all want to keep in communication with the pre-clear. You say, now what's happening? Oh, the man's walking back and forth. Now he's got his hands in his pockets. Now he's lighting a pipe. What's doing this? Well, the pre-clear's doing this all right, but he's doing this on no responsibility. In other words, he set up a machine that does it for him. Now, he set that up a long time ago. Now, how do you get him so that he can control a mock-up? Well, it's very, very simple. You merely have him make the man do the things the man is doing. You have him set up, himself, in other words. Have him set up the man, and have him make the man light a pipe, and have him make the man walk back and forth. First thing you know, he's got no man at all. Oh, you've ruined my mock-ups, he says. Now, you keep at it just a little bit longer, and he will have a man. Only this time, when he says the man will lean up against the wall, the mock-up leans against the wall. That's all there is to that. Now, he may forget to have the man lean artistically against the wall, so the mock-up, he'll say, all right, now lean against the wall, and the mock-up just sort of, bunk. He's not used to being so literal that he say, now the man in a check suit, or there will be now a man in a check suit. There'll be a man in a check suit with a head on, too. will raise his arm and put it up on top of the wall and then lean against the wall. His mock-ups will do exactly what he says. So this automatic machinery that gives people these image pictures is, of course, very unreliable. And you start giving a pre-clear various mock-ups. You run into this quite often. You'll say, all right, now, let's get a mock-up of a cat. Now duplicate the cat. Now duplicate the cat. Now duplicate the cat. Now duplicate the cat. And you say, wait a minute, I haven't got any cats. What's happened here? Well, you say, put a cat out there. If you keep at it for a little while, he can put a cat out there. He has an automatic machine that mocks up cats. And you just ran it out. And so his mock-ups disappeared. And he's liable to get very upset about this. He was having something done for him, nice and comfortable. The ridges were taking him down the road. He wasn't taking the ridges down the road. The only thing wrong with this fellow is he's being taken down the road. His decisions have caved in on him. He can't make decisions. He's quite upset with life and so forth. What's wrong with him? He just can't be caused. He can't be in New York putting a tap on the line and get a tap back in San Francisco. Now, a pre-clear who's in good condition can both put the tap on the line in New York and be in San Francisco and receive it. You see, he can string a communication line between himself and himself with great ease if he is willing to be both cause and effect. But a person who is not willing to be cause and effect is in that condition simply because he set up everything automatically. You know, the machine then is the cause, and it's received on the machine, the body. It's the machine here and the machine there. It's all automatic. Everything's automatic. Everything's done for me, done for me, done for me. You see that? In other words, the Thetan is marvelous. A Thetan can set up some of the doggonest mechanical operations that you ever ran into. SOP-8O, for instance, specializes in having them set them up and knock them apart, and set them up and knock them apart, set them up and knock them apart. When you first start that thing in, you say, all right, now set up a machine, rig up something, put a postulate out there and fix it in space. That's the way you set up a machine. So that it will send you every place you think of. Okay, now hide it. Now forget about it. Okay, now think of a place. And he thinks to himself, New York. You say, where are you? Right here, he says. You say, blow up the machine. And now, really now, make a machine that works. We're not interested in just a mock-up of a machine. We want a real working piece of machinery. Now, let's fix up a machine that'll send you every place you think of. Okay. Now, hide it. Now, forget about it. Got it now? Forget about it. Okay. Now, think of Alaska. Okay, where are you? Right here, he says. Now, look, you say. Let's set up a machine that sends you wherever you think. Now hide it. Now forget about it. Now think of Tierra del Fuego. Where are you? My God, he says, Tierra del Fuego. Bing. Now think of Rome. Bing. What do you know? He says, the machine works. I can still set them up. Oh, this is wonderful relief to him. But what did you do? Why did you have to set it up several times? You may wind up having to set it up 100 times. On some of these complex things, well, you have to run out the old machine. How do you do that? You just make him do it. How do you run out, then, any automaticity, any habit, or any strange phenomenon that is occurring? Have the pre-clear do it, of course, and that is the answer always. Now, what about this fellow who says he's going to get know-nothings? He's going to be a success in life, you know? Life isn't going to leave him penniless and starving in some gutter. No, sir, he's going to be a success. Zing, zing, zing. Now, there's nothing wrong with this at all. But he gets it so determined, and he sets it up so automatically, that he gets incapable of having nothing. Well, that's a sad state to be in, since a thetan himself is essentially nothing. So he can't have himself. He always has to be something else. And so he gets into a weird hurdy-gurdy all down through the ages. He doesn't quite know where he's going or what he's doing. Well, you tell this pre-clear, now put no gold ball over in the corner. And he gets a gold ball. That's a know-nothing machine, that's all. There must be know-nothings. And he gets a something every time he wants a nothing. Because he knows better than to let himself loose. You can't trust yourself, you know that. Every time you trust yourself, you're liable to build some Frankenstein character that does you in one way or the other. So you just better set it up automatically and keep yourself in line. That's the best way to handle yourself. Well, you've seen people like that. Well, now the best idea in the world, he thinks, is to have it set up so he can't tamper with it. So he gets all of this machinery set up there to resist all effects. If there's any common postulate to all of these automatic machineries and so forth, is to resist all effects. He set up that habit smoking, the cigarette smoking habit machine there when he was a little kid, and he set that up just beautifully to resist all effects. Well, they say I can't smoke, huh? Well, I'll smoke. I'll go out in the back of the barn, and nobody's going to stop me smoking. When I'm older, there isn't anybody going to stop me smoking. The idea, I can show him my father smokes, doesn't he? My grandfather smokes, doesn't he? My mother smokes. Ah, yes, sir. He's going to smoke. In other words, that's resist all effects, you see. Machinery must resist all effects. So you say to him, blow it up, and it still sits there. What's wrong with it? It's just there to resist all effects, of course. He forgot to say, including mine. Or, accept mine. Never qualified it. He just says, resist all effects. Now, if he set it up, resist all effects, including mine, why, he's put it completely out of his control, so after a while, it can control him. Now, if he puts it up there, resist all effects, except mine, anytime he takes a glance at it, it's going to blow, but somebody else can take a glance at it, and it won't blow. So we get this automaticity. Actually, these are energy masses. A thetan fixes ideas in a mass of energy. And if it was mobile, it's a symbol. And if it is not mobile, you could classify it as a piece of machinery, just roughly. All right. Now, what is a body but an idea fixed in energy? Now, when you take this body and train it, what you're trying to do is fix ideas into it and fix more ideas into it and fix more ideas into it and get them real fixed, you know, so it won't move. And you have a trained body. But that body is sitting there to resist all effects. It, of course, can't resist all effects. So the thetan is being made a liar out of day after day after day after day. The body gets sick, that makes a liar out of the thetan. That shows him he doesn't have any force or power anymore. Why doesn't he have any force or power? It's because he set something in there to resist all effects, then by golly, it didn't. So there's your problem of downward spiral. The thetan always becomes less powerful and less powerful the more automatic things he sets up. He is actually capable of being in a dozen places at once, doing a dozen different things, all on his own clear-cut thinking pattern, totally on his own volition. But unfortunately, that's not fun. When you start to play chess, you possibly played with yourself. You sat on one side of the board, and then you flip over to the other side of the board and make a move, and then you flip back the first side of the board, and you make a move, and you flip over to the other side of the board and make a move, but you knew what move you were going to make. So the thing to do is to schizify yourself and just drop a curtain so you don't remember what you're doing when you're not him. And that way, you can set yourself up as two people who can then be opposed to each other and so play a game. And most people are playing this game with themselves, but it has stopped being a game because they forgot who laid in the barrier. They did. And they laid it in to resist all effects. And then they had to forget about it. The funny part of it is, you take a preacher who's having trouble with this, and you put two chairs, one chair on the right side, one chair on the left side, and have him bawl himself out from both chairs. You know, have him sit down in one chair, his body, and look at the other chair and say, "What are you doing sitting in that chair? Why don't you speak up? It's your move." And then have him get up and sit down in the other chair and look at the first chair and say, "Well, it's not my move, it's your move." You'll get some very interesting things happening, including the complete breakdown of the insanity known as schizophrenia. Only that doesn't happen to be why the technique is there. It happens that a person can practically spin in doing this. And so that's an extreme rare case of its happening. Everybody does it. And just because the mind is capable, the mind has to be capable of anything which it can later become insane on. Do you understand that? I mean, anything the mind can become insane on or obsessed with, it has to be capable of doing it in the first place. You do not find steam engines which run on coal all of a sudden developing diesel oil trouble. Well, similarly, the mind can only get set and fixed on things which it itself is capable of doing. So we look at these extreme manifestations, we say, "Oh boy, this mind is terrible. I mean, the human mind, oh my goodness, it's not trustworthy, it's not reliable." No, it is. The fellow just keeps setting himself up so he won't trust himself, so he won't remember, so he can have a game. And then he forgets after a while that it's a game. And having forgotten it's a game, very happily then, louses himself up like mad. Because it then becomes serious. It becomes important. There's a terrible thing about this universe and about a Thetan. A terrible thing. He can't do anything else but survive. And when he thinks that his survival is so limited by barriers, which he conceives to be there, that is to say, his motion is so limited by these barriers, this survival becomes very onerous indeed. The point is, he can't do anything but survive. I don't care how long. He can't do anything but survive. And so there he is. He can't do anything but survive over a long period of time. The only question that remains is how well or how happily or how much pleasure is this survival? How well is he surviving? How much pleasure is there in this survival? That's the only thing that remains. He can't help but survive. Now, he can survive with a margin of consciousness, which is about 1 millimeter wide. There's practically no consciousness at all. But he never goes completely out. Doesn't matter how rigorous a trap would be. He couldn't be trapped to a point where he'd be completely gone. Actually, he's tremendously able. And the truth of the matter is, he resurges very fast from this state the moment he believes there's the slightest chance of having a game and having some fun. Men run on that hope. Why don't slaves working in mines under starving conditions, prisoners, Russian captured prisoners, working in the snow and having just a tiny speck of bread to eat a day and having no clothes and so forth, why don't they just knock the mock up off and beat it? Nothing easier. There's nothing to it, actually. Any Thetan knows that he can do this. Well, he's not yet convinced that it's hopeless. See, he's not convinced. Now, if you were to really sit down and convince him that it was hopeless and prove to him conclusively that this condition was going to continue for many years, it would probably continue for as many years as the body could live, and that it would eventually die right there, and it wasn't going any place from there, and it would be hell there. Well, he probably wouldn't believe you. But if you could just convince him of this, he just would do just that. He would just lay the mock-up down and shove off. The most resistive five that I care to have anything to do with couldn't exteriorize. He knew there was some truth in this because of the force of my logic and because he didn't really believe it was happening to his pre-clears, but they seemed to get better, and so on. It was all kind of unreal and so on. I made this fellow sicker than the well-known dog. It's an awful sick dog. And I made him quite ill. I got him to a point of where he just convinced there was no hope for it. I just sympathized with him and talked beautifully sad to him. And he got sicker and sicker and sicker. I was just waiting for him to exteriorize. And we agreed. I stuck him in 3 or 4 engrams that were real bad. And he finally, his body was kind of hurt and felt dull, and it was just gone. I gave him this powerful sales talk on it. It was just hopeless and so forth. He backed out of his head and went and sat down on a bellboy out in the English Channel. And he said, you know, he said, I could just sit there and cry for hours if I could just get there. And I said, well, go out there and do it. And he did. Left the body there almost lifeless, you know. And he went out and he sat down on the bellboy, watched a pelican or something. After a while, body all of a sudden alerted a little bit. And he says, you know, I think you're full of beans. Hey, it isn't this bad. And he went back inside, and another 10 hours of processing couldn't get him out. Yes, there was hope. The fellow says, where there's life, there's hope. Oh, no. No, no, that's completely backwards in this backwards universe. Where there's hope, there's life. And no further than that. What life will tolerate is tremendous. Actually, pain or any sensation is better than no sensation. Any sensation is better than no sensation. Any mass is better than no mass. The one thing he likes to avoid is nothingnesses. The only reason he likes to avoid nothingnesses is because it takes mass away from him. If you don't believe this, drop something into a vacuum that has some pressure in it, and you will see the vacuum take the mass away. It'll dissipate it right now. Zoom. If you were to take a man with 15 pounds per square inch of pressure inside the body and drop him into space out here, 500-800 miles out from Earth, he would make the palest pink mist the quickest you ever saw. 15 pounds per square inch is quite an explosive charge. Yeah, you can see that. It's not terribly explosive, but you'd see a similar charge and a similar explosion if you were to put 30 pounds per square inch in a boiler and have it very badly constructed, you know, have made out of paper mache or something. You put about 30 pounds per square inch in it, it'll explode. Well, a man explodes the same way in space. All right. Here we have a problem, then, in space, in that it takes away from you. You know, it grabs. And another thing is you get up against a couple of big heavy masses and you start discharging. You know, you get an energy charge going between you and this big heavy mass. And the next thing you know, the energy you have is dissipated slightly. Now, you walk up to this beautiful car. I mean, it's beautiful to you, and your acceptance level might be a Model T 1924 Ford with its radiator bashed in, its motor wouldn't run. But you, whatever your acceptance level of the car is, in other words, what terminal you're willing to accept now, that is to say, what can you have, which is the same thing, your idea of what you can have, and it is this idea of what you can have, whether or not it's a Cadillac or a Model T. You walk up to it, and you're thinking to yourself, boy, that car is really beautiful, that's real nice, that really sends me, that's a nice car, and so forth, and you stand there for a while. If someone were to suddenly sweep that car away from you, in other words, just separate the two terminals, you could know that this was going to happen, and you would still experience a tremendous drop of potential. You would feel, for a moment, very degraded. It's a test that can be made, a very easy test. Here's where affinity comes in. Affinity is what wavelength? You know, you want to know what a person's affinity is, you just find out what they will discharge against, what is acceptable to them. Well, that tells you what their wavelength is. That's all. Their wavelength is a Model T Ford or it's a Cadillac. It's aesthetic wavelength. It's either interchangeable with beauty or interchangeable with something sordid or interchangeable with something just horribly loathsome. It's somewhere in this band someplace. Fella comes along and he marries a circus freak. Everybody says, "Well, God sakes, what are you doing?" That's his acceptance level. Well, why is it acceptance level? Well, he just knows from past experience. That's these fellows who know from past experiences know nothing. But he knows from past experience that he can't have anything else and that this circus freak isn't going to be taken away from him. He's going to lose every other kind of a terminal. But this one he can have because nobody else wants it. Now, similarly, you'll find a lot of individuals will only go around and talk to and see very sick people. Well, they know they can have a very sick person. Nobody else wants them. So their acceptance level is a very sick person. Now, what can they take away from people? Well, there's some fellows that can go in, like the Federal Income Tax Bureau. They can go in and reach their hands into everybody's pockets and take the very best out of their pockets and take it back to Washington. Their acceptance level is total. Here we have another problem, though. That's the acceptance level of the government at the moment. All right? Social taxes and other taxes and so forth. The government just has gotten the idea that nobody has any money but the government, so they can, of course, take your money away from you. It isn't so much an acceptance level in that case as its ownership. The government knows it owns all the money. Knows you don't own any. That isn't true. You own the money. The government doesn't own a dime. But governments get backwards this way. They get more and more socialistic, and the money belongs to everybody at first, and then it belongs only to the government, and then you're into a fascism, then it goes down tone scale into another socialism, and then it goes down tone scale, and pretty soon you get to a Rooseveltian administration. Anyway, the main thing we're trying to cover here is just this acceptance level between two masses. Now, you say to some fellow, now, put on a head. You know, wear a head. Well, you know that he can get some kind of a mass? There'll always be one kind. If you sorted it out well enough, you'd find out that there's a kind of head that will just go on to him. You know, he could just mark it up and it'll just snap right onto his head. He just no more than mark it up and he's got it. You know, bing, bing. Well, there is a kind of head that will do that. But you would often be amazed what kind of a head it is. Now, some little child, for a head to do this, you would have to have a superbly beautiful head. Clean, well-groomed, beautiful head, and it goes on. Nothing like that. You take somebody that's been around and learned by experience that one loses heads. The guy finally says, you know, I can't quite have a head. No, no, he can always have a head. He's got one, hasn't he? Well, to some degree, that's his acceptance level of a head. It's usually a little bit better or worse, because he can't quite see his head, you know. And so you have him mock up various kinds of heads. Well, your various imagining factors that have to enter in there to finally strike the kind of a head that is really acceptable to him. Well, what would you do? You'd get beautiful heads and ugly heads and heads that were fat and heads that were stupid. And he finally gets something like a head made out of solid ivory, which in itself was counterfeit. And he find out he could put this head on with great ease. He not only put it on, but he'd be able to get a mock-up of it. Well, that actually is a product of automaticity, this cut down to a point where a person has a low acceptance level. He has set up machinery to give him beautiful heads. Of course, everybody wants a machine to give him beautiful heads, so after that, he didn't have a beautiful head. A machine to make beautiful heads isn't there. I mean, if something gets set up automatically, it sooner or later disappears and doesn't operate. Why? Because he no longer feeds it energy. He says somebody else or something else is doing it. Well, if somebody else and something else is doing it all the time, well, then for heaven's sakes, he isn't doing it, so he doesn't feed it any energy, so it doesn't work. The only fuel those machines get is what he feeds them. All right? Here we have, then, a problem of a person down through all the years of his living having set up machinery which will make or acquire all the beautiful things, And he has neglected, you see, beautiful things are just consideration, but he has neglected all the way down through these years to set up anything ugly. So when you ask him to do something, he knows the last band left for him to set something up. So his volition is now only in the band of ugliness. And all the machinery which he once had to set up things beautifully, all that machinery is in disuse. It isn't set up. He isn't using it. There, it's gone. He knows he can't do it. Well, the only reason he can't do it is because he did it once and then set it up automatically, and then the automaticity failed, so after that he says, I can't do it. Why can't he do it? It's because he set it up automatically and then forgot that he set it up automatically, and then that machine failed, and now he can't do it. You ask somebody to get a beautiful mock-up. He knows he can't get a beautiful mock-up. Why does he know this? Well, that's because the machine is broken down that gives him beautiful mock-ups. Why is it broken down? Well, it's broken down because he doesn't feed it energy anymore because he wasn't doing it. And so the problem doesn't work out to be much of a bugaboo. It isn't a very upsetting problem. It isn't upsetting at all. It's just you have to make the fellow do what the automatic machine is doing. Well, one way, and a covert way of doing it, is to have him waste whatever the machine is no longer producing, whatever a machine is no longer producing. You say, now get a superbly beautiful mock-up. Nah, he can't do that. So you say, all right, waste a beautiful mock-up. Of course, the fastest way to waste a mock-up is by not looking at it. That's the best way to waste a mock-up, not feel it, not look at it. So he sort of gets the idea that he's made the mock-up under his foot, and he doesn't look at it, and it evaporates. He wastes it, in other words. And you waste it in brackets. That is, say you have somebody else waste one. Have him have somebody else waste one. And then somebody else have him waste one. You know, just like I've been working you in this processing in brackets. And so we get around to a point where he's wasted enough and accepted enough and saved enough beautiful mock-ups, and we keep running this around, and all of a sudden he'll say, now I will have a beautiful mock-up, and by golly, he gets one. But he would only think of it in terms of getting one if he still had a remnant of an automatic machine which would work. You can always take a frame of energy and work it by postulates until it is a beautiful form. Just do it straight. But if you've got a machine that kicks back at you, that's running faster than you are, that it's supposed to do it, but it doesn't do it anymore, and every time you try to do it, it wipes you out, why, there you go. Because any automatic machine will wind up by unmocking what it started out to mock up. Any automatic machine will wind up by wiping out what it once started to mock up. And the reason for this is just polarities and flows. It'll eventually reverse itself. Why? Stuck flow phenomena. Now, here's a point. Let's say you've talked for a long time to somebody. You get a stuck flow on it eventually. You don't feel like you can talk in that direction anymore. Well, if you were to just mock up a fire hose that was squirting out a flock of words and put it in the back of your neck, out the front of your face, and just spray it around for a while, finally you'll find that first one drop will come out of it, and another drop will come out of it. If it's too hard to do, turn the fire hose on you. Mock it up out in front of you, roaring away at you. You will unstick the flow because you make particles fly on the same band, and because you're thinking about talking when you're doing this, you've got the adjusted band of talkingness which is coming straight at you back and forth. And so you clean up all these stuck flows. Now, these people who are stuttering, one of the easiest things to do I ran into is do something about stuttering. The fellow's automatic machinery, it was set up to talk automatically, and then somebody kept interfering with this fellow to a point where his machine didn't work and he couldn't talk either. So he's in a terrible state. He's on a set of stuck and reversed flows. People just take a fire hose and have it squirt words around at people and knock them down, and have a fire hose squirt words at him and knock them down, and just mock this fire hose flowing around. This fellow who's been saying, all of a sudden will just talk. There's nothing to it. It's just a flock of stuck flows. Take the person who's deaf. It seldom occurs to anybody who is deaf that there's a terribly easy remedy for it. You mock up a fire hose full of sound and pour it in both ears. And then mock them up inside the head and pour them back out through the ears again. You'll unstick the flows. Because there's another rule. And this is in terms of resistances and so forth. And it's a good sound electronic rule, and it just runs this way. After a flow has gone so long in one direction, it develops enough inertia to reverse. That's all. A flow that's gone just so long in one direction will eventually have a tendency to turn around backwards. The moment that it does that can be fast or slow. A direct current flowing forever will set electrolysis into systems and begin to unmock the systems. The only thing wrong with direct current and so forth is the wires get thinner. You just get a flow and it goes 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 and it'll build up heavy here and light there and so on. This is no great problem operating with big heavy copper wires and so forth in electricity lines. It's no great problem, mostly because there isn't much current passing through them and there's lots of mass there in terms of wire. But boy, don't think it doesn't get to be a problem on a ship. One day the engineer, this is surprising, you actually realize that you'd have to talk to some of these marine engineers who have been up against it. They go down and they open the boiler room door, you know, and they go in and they open a boiler and they look at their tubes. What tubes? Mass is gone. There's a flow going through the ship which is actually carrying particles out into the water. The ship is going forward through the water and it has certain motions. And it always does these same motions, and the flow is always in the same direction. And as a result, the ship starts disappearing. Actually, its boilers will disappear. There's that much particle flow connected with a stuck flow. All right, it just keeps disappearing. In other words, it starts to unmock itself by going in one direction continually. Well, the thing to do about this would be to really stick the flow and make it very solid and make it so it wouldn't flow in that direction. Well, the way to do that would be to put up some sort of a magnetic plate or something in another direction so that the flow could no longer persist in that direction. In other words, balance the potential flow or turn it back on itself again. You'd have to handle an electronic flow in order to cure electrolysis on ships. In a similar way, a person will start to unmock himself with communication. He starts talking. He keeps spraying himself right on out there. And these people who stutter generally have been kind of knocked down in this direction, only they did it real early. How do you repair this mass again? Flow, mass, stuck flows, particles. We don't care too much about it one way or the other. It all comes down to this very interesting, very easy thing. As long as a person has a couple of big, massive terminals, he can actually conceive of enough energy flow going between those two terminals so that he doesn't have to create any. And that's the way a person sets up something automatic. And the whole problem of terminals is the problem of automaticity. Sets it up automatically. How does he talk? Well, this person who's going to have trouble eventually with talking puts up a couple of big ridges, and these ridges interchange one to the other, and they flow through his vocal cords one way or the other, and all the energy of talkingness and so forth is fed in from these various terminals in the body. And then one day it sticks, and one day he hasn't got enough mass anymore to do it. Instead of creating more energy, he just stops talking. See, he got out of the habit of creating any energy. Well, now, if you just get him back to creating energy again, he'll start talking. He'll start acting. He starts having energy. The horrible part of it is we've talked for years and years and years in terms of the body, and we said we've got to have energy. Yes, sir. You read on the TV screens of the land, those gorgeous, I don't know how the country could possibly do without television. I'm sure that the bars would go broke. Anyway, the boys who come on there and they say, eat the food of champions, you know, have more energy. Guaranteed to be 70% more energy than eating iron bars or something. And, you know, have more energy, have more energy. Here, have more energy. Here, have more energy. That's the only menace there is in this universe. It'll give you energy. You can hook into its energy supply lines any time, and it's got so many big masses around that it's very easy to do this. The energy's no good to you is the only real trouble with it. The only energy that's any good to you is yours. You can tune it up and do various things with it. This energy will wait on you hand and foot. And it will just wait on you and do things for you. But as soon as it finds out that it has done enough so that you don't create anymore, it'll stop doing them for you. Isn't that peculiar? Kind of looks like you were the only person doing anything in the first place, doesn't it? Well, you were. But you just got the idea that you aren't. All right, let's then go into something tremendously more practical than what I've been talking about. I've been talking about theory. Let's get into this practicality, and let's find out that an individual who sets up something automatic has set it up for randomity. You know, we set up an automatic chess player to play chess with him so he can face the table and play a game of chess with the automatic chess player. Well, it's got to be unpredictable. If it were predictable, he'd be it. So he's got to make it very unpredictable in order for him not to be it. So he just stops predicting it. And after a while, what do you know? He stops predicting the future. Say, can you imagine somebody who doesn't know exactly what's going to happen tomorrow, who thinks there's something wrong with knowing what's going to happen tomorrow? Well, stretch your imagination not quite so far, I suppose. Can you imagine somebody that doesn't know exactly what's going to happen next year? I know, frankly, you wouldn't think anybody in this society was that goofy. But the truth of the matter is, they don't. They don't know what's going to happen next year. There are people walking there out on the street right now that will not be able to tell you, even though you pressed them or paid them for it, they would just not be able to tell you where they will be on December the 3rd at 3 o'clock, 1955. Do you know that? I know it sounds incredible to you, but it's true. In other words, they're lost. There are two sections where they're lost. One is the past, and the other is the future. In the barrier of time, unknowingness is the only barrier. Truth of the matter is, unknowingness is the only barrier. The poor old physicist, I feel sorry for the physicist. I'll pat him on the back as long as it suits our purposes, but he actually doesn't rate many pats on the back. He goes around and says, man is mud, and mud is man, and people are no good, and so forth. He's gotten himself into a horrible spot. Do you know what he's done? He's found there's no wall. A few years ago, he was in this happy, certain frame of mind. He knew what an electron was. Yes, sir, he could tell you right down to the T what an electron was. He can't tell you today. He knows there's nothing there but space, but it has mass. Isn't that terrible? It's a gorgeous situation. In other words, he's gotten down to the point in terms of science, scientifically, he now asks the question with great scientific accuracy, what wall? Because he knows that there's nothing there but space. All of his analysis demonstrates to him there's nothing there but space, and that the only reason that a wall doesn't go through a wall seems to have something to do with the fact that a wall can't tolerate the magnetic field of another wall. But as far as mass is concerned, there doesn't seem to be any mass there. It's very peculiar. Well, he's kind of gotten into this barrier of time himself to some degree. He doesn't quite know what time is. But a wall is not knowingness. When the nuclear physicist began to know a great deal about walls, he found there was no wall there. Boy, there's nothing thicker than a wall you don't know anything about. If you don't believe that, veer off a dark road some night with a car and run into a brick wall you didn't know was there. That will be the solidest wall you ever connected with. That'll really be solid. The time barrier is one that you don't know about. Because one sets up barriers simply so he will not know. He can't have a game if he knows all the answers and knows who's going to win. And so he has to set up some unknowingness. And the first foe of knowingness is space as a barrier, and the next foe of knowingness is time. People don't know where they were in the past, and they don't know where they were in their future. Now you start patching up somebody by running their past. That's completely unreasonable, by the way. I wish to tell you that it's psychotherapy that runs past. In Scientology, we're not interested in past. We're only interested in knowingness. We're not interested in what a guy's been, what he's done. We're not interested in how bad he's been or anything else. Although in the HAS, we're founding a stragglers club, those that we've fished out that have gone off the hinges and caused us a lot of trouble, and we had to go out and fish them out of the mud puddle and dust them off and process them up and put them back on the grooves again where they can join the stragglers club. They're not eligible for anything for a while. That's the most penalty that's offered against this line. But anyway, here's a problem in terms of barriers, of just cutting down knowingness. The more barriers you get, the less you'll know. It's all. It's very simple. The barrier's there to keep you from knowing. so that whenever one sees a barrier, he thinks there's something to know, which is the other trick, because there isn't anything to know. You see, the biggest knowingness is nothing. Now, that sounds like Lao Tzu or somebody, but it isn't. All right, to take that wall there. Now, that wall, as long as you conceive that wall, as long as you know absolutely that wall is solid, you know positively that you cannot tell what's going on or what is on the other side of that wall unless you walk around that wall and look at the other side of that wall. There's even a difference of time, then, between the moment you can sit there and look at the wall and sit there, get up, go outside, and look at the other side of the wall, and so know. So distance becomes a barrier to knowingness, you see. Now, you look up there and you see that wall. You say, oh boy, that wall, oh, that's impenetrable. Well, unfortunately, you start clearing the fellow up, and you back him on his head, and you just start clearing him up, and the next thing you know, he starts looking through those things unless he sets his sights right to see them. Because he knows who's walking down that path out there. He knows what's out there. His knowingness has come up. And of course, a fellow can look through walls if his knowingness is up. There's nothing to it. I mean, it's the most, what you should be puzzled about is why a wall sits there and you permit it to refuse you knowledge, to bar you from having knowledge. That's what should be curious. Not the reverse way, too, but it's kind of a backwards universe. That's very curious. I mean, you look at the wall and you say, well, you can't see through that wall, but there must be some desirability to it, mustn't there? I mean, you must not want to be looked at. You'd rather not be looked at by somebody walking down there, so you say, well, all right, there's a wall there. So you and the fellow outside both agree there's a wall there. That's because you have something to protect. You have something, a mock-up or something that you're looking at. Well, people who are very occluded are hiding in the dark. That's a very effective barrier. Just try and find a needle in the black horse head in Orion. Just try and find a needle. That thing is several light years deep across and so forth, and it's all black. And if you could conceive of a small needle about an inch long lost in it, why, you'd have the idea of its security against being found. Except by somebody who knew. And somebody who really knew, say, needle, let's see, it's up there in the upper corner. Yeah, there's your needle. You ever run into one of these people that loses everything all the time? They lose everything all the time. I mean, they walk out and they haven't got a hat, and they walk back in again and they had forgotten their pants. You know, they just lose everything. Well, they're just a study in knowingness, and that's all they're a study in. They have put up enough barriers against knowingness so that they no longer know. How do you find something? By going and looking for it or at it with your messed eyes? Have you ever counted the number of things which you find immediately, every day, without really remembering where you put them or anything like that? You just go and you find these things, and you walk up to drawers, and you go through them, and you walk around buildings. You can confuse yourself no end by simply saying to yourself, you know, this is an awfully big building, and it has a labyrinthine character in its halls, and I wonder how I lose myself in it. Because, you see, that's kind of fun to get yourself lost. It's a relief from knowing all the time. So you'd have to actually think about it to get yourself lost. If you were to stand there for a moment and wonder how you got into the main office, you would, unfortunately, or what you think, you would simply walk through into the main office. It's almost impossible to lose something unless you sit down and think about it. But you've got automatic losing machines. Now, I'll give you an example of that. Get an idea right now. I think I will lose my right foot. Now, I'm going to lose my left foot. Just decide. Now, I'm going to lose my right foot. Now, I'm going to lose my left foot. Now, I'm going to lose my right foot. Now, I'm going to lose my left foot. Now, I'm going to lose my right foot. Now, I'm going to lose my body. Now, I'm going to lose my body. Now I'm going to lose my right foot. Now I'm going to lose my left foot. What's happening as you do that? You're probably getting the feeling of being lost, for one thing. Anybody start missing their feet? Anybody start see a couple of people looking to see if they're there. did you start to lose your sense of location of them, or did you start to pick up your sense of location of where your feet were? Sure. Because you're doing what the machine's doing. See? All you have to do it, it's very fast. It's so fantastically easy to take over the control of any automatic operation a person has set up, such as losing something, such as getting sick. You know, getting sick is an automatic operation. It's made out of engrams. It's a ridge made out of engrams, and he uses the engram to get sick, and then he says, well, it's not my engram, and it just preys on me, and it beats me to pieces. So it's too fantastically easy. Only it just wouldn't occur to an auditor or somebody offhand to this fellow is suffering from lumbitis, and he's in agony. And the auditor's first thought is, well, let's get him out of this, and let's get him feeling better. Oh, no. No, no. A process that's quite workable is be lumbitis, no? Now be yourself. Now be lumbitis. Now be yourself. Now be lumbitis. Now be yourself. Now be lumbitis. Be yourself. He's interiorized. I mean, no special case. You just walk up to this fellow that has a bad leg, and you say, now be the bad leg. Now be you. Now be the bad leg. Now be you. Now be the bad leg. Because he can only have automaticity when he said, it's not I. So you just have him be whatever's automatic. Now, be a machine that is forcing yourself to smoke cigarettes. That's an example. Now, you're doing the same thing when you make a guy get the mock-up doing exactly what. You see, you make him into the machine. And that's the trick. You just make him take over the duties of the machine. Every time he gets a mock-up, it jumps up in the air and cracks its heels. All right, you say, all right, the next mock-up, whatever the mock-up does, you make it jump up into the air and crack its heels. You make it jump up into the air and crack its heels. You make it jump up into the air and crack its heels. You make it jump up into the air and crack its heels. Okay, now get a mock-up out there. He says, okay. You say, did it crack its heels? No. What's happened here? You just said, be the machine, be the machine. By doing what? By making him do it. So it tells you adequately and at great length. I could explain this to you for hours, and it would still all come out to the same thing. The only way you can know less is to be less. And the only way you can be unself-determined is to be less. And the only way to be self-determined is to be more. You see that? See how simple it is. And those are just cardinal rules, which if you follow them along, this is incidentally, I'm talking to you now about the business of living. I'm not talking to you much about processing. You go in, there's this banker, you know, and you want this note. You got to get this note countersigned and fixed up and so forth. And you say, gee, here I am talking to this banker. See, I mean, I wonder where he's going to review this note or not. I don't know whether he is or not, see? I don't know whether he is or not. I cannot predict the action of this banker, is what you're saying. All right. You walk in. Did you ever try standing on both sides of the counter and accepting your own note? You can do it. It's very simple. Doesn't interfere with him very much. Besides, he's just a banker. Had a run-in with a traffic cop not too long ago. I don't know. The finite speeds are interesting and so forth. But car can only go so fast, they tell me. And so I drove through this hamlet very early in the morning, and it was a very quiet hamlet and so forth. And there wasn't anybody around and so on. And all of a sudden, there was a yowl of a police car, so we were considerate enough to stop. And a police car rolled up alongside. He comes out of there, and he's a real tough cop. See? He comes around. Where's your license? And all of a sudden, he got much less interested in seeing the license, you know. He got less interested in the whole situation. And he finally says, well, if you play ball with us fellas, why, we'll play ball with you. Go ahead. And to this day, he doesn't have the least inkling of why he said that. But he said it, so he had to believe it. Now, the only reason that happened, the only one reason that happened, I was late for a lecture. We just didn't have time to go through and be polite about the whole thing. It was much easier simply to be the cop for a couple of seconds. There was hardly any pause in the proposition. The only way you can be victimized by a police officer is by feeling you couldn't possibly be a police officer. Therefore, if you can't possibly be a police officer, you're never going to know what a police officer is going to do. If you can't be somebody, you won't know what he's going to do. You see that? Similarly, anybody who sets himself up in the general public with certain goals, you'll find more people being terribly suspicious of what this person's doing. That's because they obviously can't be him. They obviously aren't him. They can't be him. So therefore, they don't know anything about him. And they become very upset about it. Whereas the possibility is that the fellow is the easiest problem they've ever faced. Of course, the way to be totally obfuscating in the entire society, the way to do it thoroughly, is to be completely obvious. That will baffle everybody. Now, in the matter of living, then I just invite you to try this out. It's very simple. You feel you don't know something. Oh, all right, be what knows it. Because you've assigned knowingness to something else. Now, by telling you that, I could very easily cut myself out of a job, couldn't I? And yet there's many an auditor who is up along the line and pretty well operating, who will, in a desperate moment, suddenly do that. Only he very often does it in this fashion. Let's see, what would Ron do? Okay, I'll sit here and be Ron for a moment and then audit the guy, and then it's all right, and it squares around. That's fine. It all works out. But he hasn't ever examined, I don't think, exactly why it works out. As long as he says he's not somebody who knows this business, then he has to know less about it. And by suddenly being a larger piece of knowingness on the same subject, of course he does know it. Because knowingness itself goes up. It never occurs to a little kid sitting in school to just be the teacher. If he just made up his mind right before the examination, he wouldn't have to study a lick. He'd just be the teacher and write the examination. There he goes, zick. Your success in life is directly monitored against your ability to act a part. Because you are not a part, and you will never be a part. Because a thetan is something which can approximate. And a thetan is something which can take the same form as, pervade, or approximate. But a thetan is not a piece of energy, and neither is knowingness a piece of energy. You can talk about masses all you want to. You're still not going to increase your knowingness a whit if you still consider yourself a mass. You are not a mass. You're something that knows about masses. You're something that can be masses, but you are not a mass. And so, to increase your knowingness, your capabilities, and your abilities throughout existence, just try being the things you want to be. If you don't know what you want to be, then be the thing that knows what you want to be. Now, sometimes a person will get himself a little bit bad off this way. He'll come down with pneumonia or something of the sort, and he'll say, no, 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 and he'll start running engrams on himself or do something of the sort to get rid of this pneumonia. Of course, he just gets sicker and sicker and sicker. It's not a complete panacea to say, all right, I'll be the pneumonia now and chew up my lungs. But he'll get well faster because a thetan can be pneumonia. He can only become it forcefully, however, if he resists it. It's a matter of doing things out of your own choice or having them forced upon you. And if you don't care what too much, if it isn't too desperate or too terrible to be certain things, you can be quite happy in existence because nothing can be forced upon you. If you're willing to be your enemy can never hurt you. Okay.